for turning out in such large numbers on an awful night, for the first in our series of talks for the put on by the Tackley Local History Group for this season. You will see from the programme that we've got quite a lot this season on Roman Britain. That's intentional because, as many of you will know, and as David is going to explain, one of the things that was found in the Street Farm site was a mosaic floor. And that mosaic floor has been donated by Dean Field Holmes, the developer of the site, to the village. And the parish council has accepted the donation of the mosaic and allocated land just behind the hall, between the hall and the school, for us to build a building to house the mosaic and a small museum. It's just a small matter of raising a significant amount of money to do so, but that will happen somehow. So that's why we've deliberately chosen to have three talks this year on Roman Oxfordshire. And I'll say something about the rest of the programme after David's talk. And I'm extremely pleased to have David here. He knows us extremely well because he spent a year excavating the site and found a villa which no one had any idea was there. So David, who is the archaeologist who was in charge of the site for Thames Valley Archaeological Services that was doing the excavation. David.
Thank you very much. Well, John said, thank you very much for coming in that with us, this horrendous weather tonight. I hope I will make it worse. I want to thank also to the local historic group and to John for inviting me and give me the opportunity to, over a year after we finished the excavation, be back here and show the first results of the excavation that we undertook just a few meters from here, and on which we are currently working on the report and the publication that will follow, hopefully if everything goes all right, in a few months from now. I want to apologize for my voice because I had a really bad cold for the last 2 days and I'm still coughing a lot, so I will be doing a lot of breaks to drink water, and my voice may not sound as good as it should, but hopefully it will hold for the whole talk. Well, the title of this talk is The Roman Villa of Tackley, First Results of an Archaeological Excavation. And the first thing that I always try to clarify is that what we found is not only a Roman villa. It's obviously the most impressive of the results. Many of you have probably been in the open day that we did and the open evening that we organized with the local historic group. And the most impressive result is always that stone walls, the mortar floors, and obviously the mosaic floor. But that's probably only three of the faces that we have on the site. The Roman villa is only part of a much bigger archaeological site, of which we had the chance to probably dig only a very small portion. So let's start with some background. As Tom very much said already, between November 2017 and August 2018, for nearly a year, over 9 months, we were undertaking an archaeological excavation in advance to the housing development that did Finn Holmes. I believe it's just finishing, again, it's a few meters from us. We were not involved in the first part of the project. A different archaeological unit did a few trenches on the side and identify already the presence of a Roman building and a Roman site of some interest. I believe the site chain of owners, and at the end we had the chance to come to do the full excavation. The background about the village of Tackley is probably a bit pointless. We are all here, we know where we are. Just mention that we are in the Cherwell Valley, which is a really rich area in terms of archaeology. Just talking with John a few minutes ago, I was telling him, I feel like I've been following the Cherwell Valley, following one site after another for the last 4 or 5 years, And probably in a few months I will be doing one more, just a bit farther north in Bunbury. So somehow the Cherwell Valley has become kind of my area of expertise in this part of the country. We are just 8 miles from Oxford and 6 miles from Bicester, which is probably the most important location, considering that Bicester was originally, from a very early moment, a Roman town with some military presence in the mid-first century AD. Just a small map with the location of the village and the location of the area for our excavation. Again, it's very much where we are, so not much more to say. During all this time, we undertook a small scale excavation in an area that, as many of you probably know, has a lot of archaeology. The local historic group and different developments has identified a field system of Roman date, a large prehistoric occupation of the whole area. Thanks to John, we know that it's at least 8 possible occupation sites, maybe small village, small settlement that could or could not be related with the villa itself. And obviously, Ekman Street, the main Roman road that is just a couple of hundreds meters away from the location of the villa, and which probably is one of the main factors that explain why the villa is where it is. That close link to one of the main roads crossing Britain during the Roman period. About the archaeological excavation, the area that we have the chance to investigate, it was about 0.6 hectares. A relatively big area, but considering what we found, is probably just a very small portion of the Roman occupation of this area, this lower area where today the village of Tagli is sitting. For most of that area, what we found was a very simple stratigraphy. With the machine, we went straight down to the natural gravel. We found some topsoil and plough soil underneath with no evidence of any archaeology. But in a small area that was probably not even a third or about a third of the extension of the site, we found a much more complex stratigraphy, result of the different buildings, the different Roman building of the villa complex that we will be finding a bit later. For the excavation, we are dividing, for the report and the publication, we are dividing all the archaeology, all the sequence that we found in 6 different phases of occupation, covering at least 4 centuries during the Roman period, from the very beginning to the very end of the Roman period in this part of Britain, plus a small some small evidences of prehistoric activity, probably during the Bronze Age, early Bronze Age, late Neolithic, in the form of sand cremations, so small flakes of flint. But, so this is... it's not really focused, but kind of visible, I hope. So that's a simplified version of the general plan of our excavation, on which, as I said, the proper villa, the proper Roman villa, will cover this corner with 2 different buildings, and all the rest of the site. It was also quite rich in terms of archaeology, starting much earlier than the construction of the villa, and which continue even after the villa get abandoned. We try to divide this all that archaeology in those different phases to be able to get a look at it without all the confusion that's supposed to have all that there. And as I say, that's a very simplified version. The master plan that I have in my computer, as we open it, it looks like a Picasso. It's impossible to see anything at all there. So we're going to try to simplify everything and go one by one to do like a small resume of those different phases. So at the end, you can have an idea of what we found and what it was there during the Roman period. And our first phase is actually not Roman at all. It's a prehistoric phase with a very low intensity. So you see highlighted in blue these small spots, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 here and 3 more at this end, is 8 small cremation pits that we identify. We originally thought that could be probably Roman as well, because just a bit farther, this point here, we found a skeleton with some Roman pottery associated. Our surprise was when we started digging then, for most of them we had no finds at all, but in one of them we found some pottery that looks much older. I'm not a big specialist, but from the beginning we were quite certain that we were dealing with prehistoric pottery, with something much older than the Roman phases of occupation that we were dealing with. So you can see here some photos of 3 of those cremation pits. As you can see, really, really small things. Just a small hole in the ground, fill it with some cremated bone, really small fragments of cremated bone, and a lot of charcoal. But which are giving us a lot of information. And it has been actually perfect timing, because only this morning I had on my email the specialist report from the anthropologist that was studying that cremated bone. So I will be able to give some more information than just some early Bronze Age, late Neolithic cremation. That is what I've been able to say until now. So of those 8 cremations, we know that at least 3 of them were probably kid or really young males. We know that other 2 were relatively old males as well. Those 2 cremations have clear evidences of degenerative disease that should happen only after the 40, 50 years old. So we can be certain that those people that were buried there were at least 40, 45 years old. We cannot say that much about the 3 cremations that we identify, like, probably we shouldn't call them kids. The anthropologists use the term non-adults, usually referring at some people of up to 16, 17 years old. And it's also the cremation where we have a much smaller amount of bone. And then the most interesting one, probably, is this cremation down here, 724, where the small fragments of bone that we found has allowed the anthropologist to identify a young woman, probably about 20, 25 years old, that was pregnant in the moment of her death, as he has been able to identify some small fragments of bone of the fetus, which will be probably about 28 weeks old. The most interesting thing of all this cremation is that they are showing us a typical range of age and sex, different people, different age, different sex. It's not a very specific group of people who died in a specific moment and were buried in the area. It's just different people of a community who probably through different years were dying and they were going to that area to be buried. The concentration also suggests that it may have been originally some kind of landmark to be all of them focused in that area. Sadly, we think that in that area we have lost quite a lot of the original archaeological level, probably the plague that the field suffered since the site was abandoned for probably about 2,000 years of plowing and agricultural activity has degraded the soil, and the original level is much lower, because the amount of bone that we are finding is probably about half of what we should find of a full human body cremation. Our anthropologists would probably have been able to give us much more information, and any small burrows or kind of monumental landmark covering them has been lost as a consequence of all that activity. The second phase is even lower in intensity. During the whole excavation, we have been finding everywhere, in all the ditches and pits, Iron Age pottery, but we haven't been able to identify clearly a pit, a ditch, something that we can say, yeah, this is Iron Age, this is a pit dug and backfilled during the Iron Age. We have Iron Age pottery spread all across the site, and we only have a tiny pit down here in the corner, where all the pottery that we have is of an Iron Age date. I think in total it's like 25 sets of Iron Age pottery. Honestly, I'm not even certain if it's an Iron Age pit or it has been just casual that pottery ended there with no Roman pottery at all, and we have one more of all those other Roman pits that we have in the area. But it's definitely some Iron Age activity around the area, which has probably, any evidence of it, has probably been destroyed by the intense landscaping and construction that happened during the Roman period. And I said we have six different phases. We probably have a few more because some of them, like phase three, have to be subdivided in several sub-phases. We are getting already into the Roman period properly, talking about a mid-late first century AD, quite an old date considering the date of the conquerors and the first military presence in Bicester, just not too far from here. But again, from the very, very first moment, we have identified some pottery that could give us that idea of a transition phase between the late Iron Age and the early Roman pottery. We have a relatively nice ensemble of what the our specialists call pre-Flavian pottery, probably mid-first century AD, but sadly again it's redeposited in much later ditches and pits. And we have something that was my big frustration during most of the excavation, is this big enclosure covering a huge area of the site with three different galleys in this site running parallel, two of them running parallel, giving us the idea of a really big enclosed area. The shape and the idea of having three parallel linears enclosing an area is quite typical of Roman settlements. Again, it's quite typical of Roman military camps, but sadly we don't have any evidence of military activity on site. We were digging, I don't know, one slot every 10 meters. There was an area that we dig 100% of the galley, tried to find any dating evidence. After 9 months on site, digging every small corner of that triple enclosure, we don't have a single set of pottery to know how old it is. The only thing we know for certain is that whether we have an intersection with any of the other pits, ditches, or galleys, that enclosure is truncated by those, so it's older than everything else on site, older than every other single Roman ditch or pit that we have, and very tentatively we can relate it with that pre-Flavian phase that the pottery is telling us about. The very first Roman occupation of the site, of which we know nothing apart of the fact that it's a huge rectangular shape enclosure. Not much later, that enclosure got completely abandoned. We have two oval-shaped enclosures, one nearly complete at this end of the site, and another one that will probably, what we are probably using maybe one third or a bit less of it. Those enclosures are relatively big ditches, going down to 1 meter deep, and then we have two parallel ditches that come from further this way, cutting across the area that where we will have the building later. One of them terminate, and the other one seems to make a corner, heading that way, heading to the northeast. We are considering this probably a pathway, some kind of a small road or trackway with both ditches on the sides, just use as a limit for that road and just to avoid any flooding, tentatively a pathway heading to this area where we have that big enclosure. Again, we don't know how much we have lost. It's the same area where we know for the cremation that we have probably lost quite a lot of soil, but all the evidences that we have from the fill of those ditches tell us that it's probably just an area where the cattle was being stocked, probably some pastoral activity. We don't have evidences of an occupation site still at this point. Usually, something that people ask me quite frequently is, if we have lost a lot of site soil, how we know that we don't have run houses, small galleys that are completely gone? It's because when we have run houses enclosed by those big oval-shaped enclosures,
Those enclosures are usually used for the deposition of garbage. You clean your house, you take all the ash, the bones of the chicken that you have been eating, and you throw them at the bottom of the ditch. We have nothing of that. Those enclosures are filled with natural gravel and sand, and very, very occasionally we have a set of pottery or tile that is giving us the date of that activity. We can see in these photos part of my team digging one of those big enclosures. You see that big oval shape going that way and coming back over there. That will be the outside enclosure. And then that's a section through the same one. So as you can see, most of the fill of it is actually just gravel, the same natural gravel of the bank that probably just a few years, a few decades after it was open, is pushed again in to flood the area and get it ready for the new developments. There's another section across the smaller ditch, the internal oval shape enclosure, much smaller, only half a meter, over half a meter deep. And again, the same circumstances, it's redeposited gravel and sand. We don't have those really dark deposits full of charcoal, full of ash, that usually evidence the presence of an occupation site, a run house, someone living there and producing all that garbage that usually end at the bottom of those ditches. And still, what we call phase three, we are still in a late first century, maybe early second century AD, we are going to get what is probably the first occupation, proper occupation phase of the site. We were a bit surprised about that one because, again, we had a couple of parallel leaches at this end that we are not quite certain what they are. The first thought could be another trackway, another path, but the gap in between the two ditches is actually quite narrow in that area. Sadly, we have only a little bit of it. We don't have quite a good idea of what happened with those ditches once they seem to split here or how they continue. Another small ditch that terminates here being truncated by a much later ditch. And then the most interesting part, again, it's not really focused, I apologize about that. I don't know if it's the quality of my photos, maybe that. In this area where we will have later the Roman building, we were digging, after we took out all the floors and we went down to the level of the gravel, we were finding a series of post holes, about 35, 40 centimeters diameter, 30, 35 centimeters deep, with a lot of limestones just stuck on it, suggesting that they were holding probably big posts. From the beginning, we were thinking that it had to be some kind of structural evidence, some kind of construction, but we didn't really see what it was until having everything in plan. We could see quite clear this parallel line here and another parallel line coming back here, which suggests that we have a small rectangular building in that area where much, where sometime later they will build the proper Roman villa with the stone walls and the mortar floors. At that stage, it will be probably just a wooden building with probably a very, very rudimentary mortar floor. Again, one of the surprises of the last few weeks when I've been working with all the faces and all the stratigraphy was to find out that what we originally consider the very bottom floor, the original floor of the of one of the rooms of the later building, fit perfectly with the alignment and end perfectly in line with the line, that line that the post holes are drawing, which suggests that possibly that first floor actually belonged to that building instead of the big stone building that we have later. Also, just next to the building, we found this. I don't really remember if on the open day that was exposed or not, so I don't really know if some of you saw it. It's a small domestic oven where we found some small seeds, probably just for cooking some bread for the day-to-day cooking and the domestic activities of the house. And the pottery that we have from that structure still is giving us a really early second century in line with the same phase that we consider for the post-type building. Both photos are the same structure, the same oven. The one on top is the pre-excavation one. When we gave a clean to what originally thought it was probably a pit, and we realized that we had something else. We had a small structure. One of my colleagues who was doing the most of the excavation with me, I was cleaning the area and came to me and told me, oh, I have an H-shape. You know what an H-shape is? An H-shape sometimes suggests an oven with the camera, the proper oven, and then the small stock pit at the front where the fire actually was placed to hit the structure. And the main change in the area seems to happen about the mid-late 2nd century AD. At that stage, you can see from the previous plan that we have, where is just some activity around the area of the building and a couple of ditches. We just jump to that. A whole chain, not only in the building itself, where the post-type building and the oven get abandoned and get buried, but by a much bigger building with the stone walls. I will go quite quickly about the building in this first part, because later we will go, I will show the different phases of the building more in detail. The main thing I want to show now is that at the same time that we have both buildings already built in a very preliminary phase with a much smaller site than what it will have later, is quite a big landscaping in the area with a huge ditch cutting across the whole site, a slightly smaller ditch coming perpendicular to join just the corner of the boundary wall of the villa, and then what seems to be small enclosures in this area, which is probably still used for animals, probably just small animal pens where the cattle will be stocked during the night. We have also a couple of small pits here and there, but the main change is that division with those two ditches doing like a cross and dividing in four big fields. One of them for the villa, for the proper buildings, and probably two, three different fields for either agricultural or pastoral activity. We can see that main ditch cutting across the whole site. It's this dark line going from this end straight to our cabin, which is cutting the already filled circular enclosure that we had at that end. Can see already in this photo the area where the buildings were. Even if at this stage we still didn't had the buildings there, what we have here is only the collapse, the demolition deposit after the building get abandoned. You can see the difference between the ditches that we had before and this. This is quite a substantial ditch. The scale that we have vertical is 1 meter high. So we are probably about 140, 150 deep in that point of the ditch. Just a bit less here, probably again about 130. It's quite a substantial ditch with a B shape. And again, showing, giving us that idea of a big boundary, more that something related with a domestic use. The same. In this same phase where we have the first building there and when we have this big division is when we can place relatively certain the skeleton, the only skeleton that we found on site. It was a grave that it was located not too far from the main building. The location of that grave is this long oval blue spot here. You can see the corner of the building. In this area, all this central area will be the internal yard, and then the back area of the villa, which will be probably just fields for agricultural activity. And in that area, we have one single skeleton. For what we have more questions than answers, the fact that the skeleton, the body, is facing down was the first thing that called our attention. Why facing down? Apparently, it's quite common to find Roman skeletons facing down related with Roman villas, but we don't really know why. The typical question that some of my guys digging on site was like, oh, we are going to find some drowned. It probably was executed and then then just pull into the grave. It doesn't seem to be the case. Again, the anthropologist has identified different cerebral traumas, broken ribs, a dislocated shoulder, but all of them were well healed by the time that he died. He probably died for a dental disease, a dental infection. Several dental diseases were identified in the teeth that still were present, and probably one of them ended in a really bad infection that finally killed him. Why it was buried facing down, we don't really know it. Again, you can see how the building keep changing, keep developing. We will go back to that. But at the same time, the landscape surrounding the villa keep changing, but very slightly. The original ditch that was coming to join this corner is had reopened again. The original big ditch that was dividing the area on the back of the villa is just pushed a bit farther to the north, but we still keep this big alignment, and then turning to join the corner of the building down here, again giving us the idea of those divisions, different fields, probably with different purpose, on the back area of the villa, probably a more functional area than the residential part of the building. And then what we call the late Roman period, it's the last phase that we will have in the 6th century, in the 4th and 5th century after the villa get abandoned. We know that the building itself stay in use at least until a very late 3rd century, potentially early 4th century. At that point, it get abandoned, the walls collapse, we found part of the collapse of the roof in one of the corridors, the walls get rubbed out, all the stone reused for different constructions, but the activity still continue on site. They keep recutting once and again parallel ditches with those field divisions. So the fields surrounding the villa stay in use. It seems that it's the residential part of the lore of the villa would get abandoned. And they come back again to some areas of the building. In this central area, we have some small structure, probably just a small hearth, a small combustion structures. We have a corn dryer that is actually dug, cutting the floors of the villa, including one of the mosaic floors that it will originally have. So the agricultural activity and the use of the fields and the land in the area continue even after the villa, the building is abandoned. How far this phase goes, that's one of the main questions that we still have. All the pottery that we have from that phase tell us that we can push the use of that area at least until a very late 4th, early 5th century. We even have a total of only four sets of Saxon pottery. Can be only four sets, it can be just a later intrusion. But with that very late Roman pottery suggests that we may be getting into an early mid-5th century, a transition period between the Roman phase and the Saxon phase, in which probably the main occupation area of what today is Tuckley, it will move to somewhere else, maybe the area of the church, maybe one of the other higher grounds area that surround the Roman villa. We have here a couple of photos of those corn dryers that was a bit of a nightmare to actually place in the right sequence, because in addition of being dug, truncating the main the floors of the building, we had a this back wall here, which is actually one of the foundations of the walls of the villa that seems to be reused for the corn dryer, and what we originally thought was truncating the structure, that it could be earlier. And in addition, the whole building, if some of you, I guess, visit the site during the open days, you will remember that there was a whole area of the building that was sinking, and is where they dug the corn dryer. So we have a later structure dug into an area where previously there was that big Roman building, and it's the area of the Roman building what was sinking, what was an absolute nightmare to actually find out what's going on and what the sequence of all this that we have here. Yeah, in this late Roman phase, we have also a series of pits, a couple of clusters of pits, absolutely full of pottery, animal bone, charcoal. You can see the difference with the fields that, of the ditches that I was showing before. That really dark field suggests an occupation site, people living in the area and throwing all the waste of the day-to-day life into those pits. And we are going to jump now into the proper Roman villa, the proper Roman building, which is definitely the most interesting part of the site. Again, we can see the location in that plan, but can probably go for a zoom in to have a better idea. So what we call the villa complex is actually two different buildings of a complex that may even have more. We may have originally a higher number of buildings. We have, for certain, a building that we were able to uncover completely in this site, what we call the main building, but we don't really know if it was the main building of the complex, or maybe somewhere else we have something bigger, something more monumental. We have a second building that we were able to uncover only partially here by the corner, just next to the school. So the school will be just down here. The road will be here. And the building seems to continue under the road, probably for a few meters. We speculate that we may have about one third of the original size of the building, but we don't really know. We don't really know how big it was. Considering the size of the first building that we call Building A, 29 meters 0.5 long, 14.5 wide. The second building, we only have 15 meters, at least half of the size of the first building. If we are thinking in a similar size for the different buildings, we are losing at least one half of the building. And one of the most interesting parts also is this rubber trench. There wasn't a single stone there anymore, but that was originally a wall that had been rubbed out and joined both buildings, enclosing an internal area that will continue here on the top, making a corner. And we found another preserved fragment of that wall in this area, and which continue heading towards the playing fields just next to the school. What again suggests that if you have a central yard area here and you have that big wall enclosing a huge area next to the buildings, we may have more buildings or more structures, more or less monumental, in this area where the playfields are and where we are now standing. That's the building that we call Building A. On the final stage of the excavation, after we literally destroyed it, we took out all the floors to find out what we had underneath, and we were able to bring a drone to take an aerial photography to see the whole shape with the standing walls and all the rubber trenches where the original walls were rubbed out in later phases. And that will be our second building, which was much better preserved. It suffered much less rubbering, and most of the walls were still standing in at least about 10, 20 centimeters plus the foundation. So we were able to have a better idea of that. Well, this, as I said, the building that we had originally evolved and keep changing during the time. The first proper stone building with stone walls and mortar floors, it will be in our phase four, that will be probably a mid-late second century AD, and it will be a smaller structure. It consists originally of a number of central rooms, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 central rooms, with two rooms and an entrance at the southwest, and then a very simple building at this corner with a big rectangular shape. That building was probably thought from the beginning and built with the idea of being a residential building, the mortar floors, the quality of the walls, the quality of the foundations, really deep down to 1 meter in some areas, suggests that that building was thought to be stable, to be probably where the owners of the villa will live. The building down here, the deepest foundation we found was 20 centimeters below the level of the original floor. They didn't care that much. The quality of the wall itself doesn't seem to be that good. And all these structures that we found here seems to be fireplace, hearth. We may have part of the kitchens or functional areas related with the residential building. In an original phase, that will evolve in a second phase, probably still during the second century, where we're looking at changes that happen quite quickly, probably in just a couple of decades. The two big rooms that we had, like an nexus to the main central area, disappear. They get demolished down to the foundation level and covered by a later floor. And then they add a full corridor, a front corridor, that give the building the aspect of the typical northern type of Roman villa. We find this type of Roman villas all around northern Europe and Britain, where the Roman Empire seat. Quite different from the original domus or villa that you can find in Spain or Italy, but much more functional considering the weather in these northern areas. You don't really want a really open building with patios everywhere and the wind just going from one room to the other. You need something compact with a corridor to access and some closed rooms so you can stay warm inside. The original building B starts to get more complex with an addition at this end, another addition at this end, and a central wall in that area. Still the quality of the walls, the foundations are exactly the same. It's still probably a functional building, completely different to the same foundations that they are building for the corridor in the main building, in building A. And then everything changed in the last phase of activity. The first building gets much more complex. Building A gets a back corridor with a small room in one corner, small room in the other corner, another small room in the corner of the original front corridor. And then they add one more wall here to create an internal corridor that communicates the front and the back corridor. But the main change happened at the bottom building, at building B, which was that very functional building, probably just a kitchen, something that they didn't care that much, probably just the servants were going there. And then in this phase, we start to find painted plaster with a very high quality, much better than the plaster that we find in the residential building. And we find what we think is probably an hypocaust. We think that at that point, that functional building turned into a bathhouse for the main residential building next to it. And at the same time that they are building new mortar floors, and they set the mosaic floors to make the original building more monumental, they turn that functional area, that possible kitchen, into a bathhouse. And the whole complex get much more the aspect of a palace, of a residential house of a very high status person that was probably running away from one of the main Roman towns of the area. It may have been something, somewhat related with the bureaucracy of some of the Roman towns in the area that in the 3rd century, with the deep crisis that the Roman Empire suffered, we have all these aristocrats running away from the towns and setting in a small rural palace, and it's when we have this very splendid Roman villas growing all around the Roman Empire. So it's probably something quite similar where what we can see here. That very rich owner of the land who has that house that he probably visits occasionally and that now is turning into his main residence and is just investing that money to make it look much more monumental, much more splendid. We're going to see some photos with too many plants and you get bored of just looking at lines. So these are some photos of the Roman building, the building A with the mortar floors and the limestone walls. That will be the central corridor, the floor of the central corridor. The final floor was very, very well preserved. Some of my guys, if you remember the open day or when you were just walking around, I have really big, really strong guys. They were struggling to break with the mattocks and the pickaxes through those floors 2,000 years later, and still quite hard to break them. So it seemed that they knew what they were doing. That's one of the main rooms. You can see the square shape of the room. The walls are gone. We have originally that square shape with the original walls being rubbed out, all the stone taken to reuse in a later structure somewhere else, but the mortar floors still standing there. Something important to consider when we talk about that latest phase that in the 4th century they are probably coming back, but it's always a probably, likely, we don't know. Something that you have to consider is that this floor, the first time I saw this floor, was actually on the track of one of the dumpers that we were using to strip the site. On that area, the depth of the site was literally this. We had the grass and about 10 centimeters of soil sitting on top of Roman floors. So everything on top would have been destroyed by the plow. We were quite lucky that we identified those really early. We were able to deal with the dampers and with the machines in a much more careful way, because we were originally thinking that we would have at least half a meter of soil protecting any structure, any building. And when we realized how shallow it was, we had to stop the machine several times and put them in a hole, because as soon as the field got wet, a damper running from one side to the other would have destroyed a full Roman floor. It was literally 20 centimeters of soil sitting on top of the floors of the big palace of whoever was living there. Some of those walls, so you can see this wall at the back, that will be the original floor, the first floor of the building, and after that they keep building up floor after floor after floor. Quite well preserved wall on that area, but you can see the difference here, what I was talking about. So that was fully excavated. That's the bottom of the foundation. In that building B, this is one of the walls of that building B. This is what is preserved of the wall. This is the foundation. That's all what they used to put the footing of that building. They didn't care at all if that would stay for a couple of years or 10. They just flood the area, dug a very shallow footing, throw some rubble there, mortar to flood, and then they build the proper wall standing on top. When in the main building, we have really, really deep footings, really deep foundations. They built that considering that it had to stand for long. Somehow, the second building survived all these years. That's part of the first building. Again, you can see the depth of the foundations of building A. So from where we have the proper wall, all this will be foundation. And we didn't even reach the very bottom of the foundation in that area. That will be the corner of the corridor, the back corridor. So if you remember, I was talking about roof collapse, that we found the whole collapse of the roof. That corner of the site was actually quite interesting, because one of the problems that we had is that we had lost most of the collapse of the building, being that shallow, and with the plow having destroyed so much of the top layers. We were considering whether they will actually have proper tile roofs or they will have other type of roof, because we were not finding a huge amount of tile in most of the rooms. But when we got to that back corridor in that area, the whole collapse of the roof was preserved in an area that, for whatever reason, probably because it was just of the corner of the structure, and the walls were still preserved, the plow wasn't able to go that deep. And the full collapse of the roof with all the tiles was preserved in situ, sitting on top of the original floor. So we know that the building A, and probably building B as well, will have a roof made with tiles, the typical red Roman tiles that will make it look really, really splendid. That's again a photo of the second building, Building B, with some of my guys doing the excavation of some of the mortar floors. Here we have already one of the rooms completely empty. The bit that was preserved of the floor dug out, and you may get to see that dark patch going across. That is one of those big ditches, those two big ditches of a possible pathway or trackway that were going underneath the building at that point. And that ditch is the one that was causing so many issues, so many problems. Again, those of you who visit the site will remember the mortar floor making that weird shape, in some areas sinking quite a lot. Once we finished digging out all the floors, we discovered that following exactly the alignment of that sand, we had a huge ditch, early Roman ditch, which probably have a very soft fill that was making the whole building sink. It's very interesting that we know that that is happening when the building is still in use, because one of the questions will be, this may have happened after the building get abandoned. But we know that it happened when the building was still in use, because we have evidence of the owner of the house trying to fix it and solve the problems. We have the first floor, the original floor that we saw in the previous photo, going with that weird shape, that big sunk. And then we have the second floor with a really thin layer of mortar on the area that was perfectly flat, and a really, really thick layer of mortar with a lot of rubble where the building is sinking. The building is sinking and they are trying to fix it, and they do it probably not on the best way. They just throw a lot of rubble on the area that sank, put another mortar floor on top, and say, yeah, hopefully that will stay a few more years. That's probably what they did. The problem is that at some point, the sunk of the floors got into structural problems. We have seen some of the walls actually moving on top of the foundation. So the alignment of the foundation and the alignment of the floor change, and it's always in the same area, always in that area where the ditch is going across underneath the building. A structural problem that at the end may have ended being so problematic that they have to abandon the building. We don't really know it. We know that they abandoned the building before it collapsed. It's not that sinking, that subsidence problems causing a huge collapse when they are still living there. We don't have anything trapped underneath, as it could be the case if it collapsed when they are still living living there. Everything gets clean. They abandon the site, and a few years later, the roof collapsed and covered the area. But that may have been the reason of the abandonment of the building, when the fields in the surrounding area still remain in use for at least another half a century or even more. Small resume. Building A is the one that shows the highest complexity, and is the one where we are going to see now the mosaic floors. The Building B is quite interesting in the sense that we see the conversion from a very functional building, again, probably a kitchen, into a really high status area, how is probably a bathhouse, with a relatively clear hypocaust, very rudimentary, but very functional. So we have some painted plaster that we recover from both buildings, with some patterns that we can see in many of the Roman villas, in this area in Oxfordshire and all around England. Patterns of colors. Sadly, I don't have here. No. These two belong to Building A. If you remember, I told you that when the second building turned into a bathhouse, we have the most splendid plaster, painted plaster in that area. It's only small fragments, but we have evidence of figurative decoration. We have evidences of water, leaves of small plants. So it's not only patterns of colors, it's actually figurative decorations of the wall of that second building, of which sadly not much is preserved. The reason of not that much being preserved, you may remember that corner by the school was covered by really big trees, even when we started the excavation. And all the top of the area has been absolutely destroyed by the trees. We don't have a single piece of plaster against the walls, because the roots were actually falling the walls and destroying everything. But we found them in the collapse of next to the wall, so we can be certain that they belong to that last phase of the building. But the first building, even if the second one has that very splendid plaster, probably because it turned into a bathhouse, the first building will still be the residential area. And the owner of the building wants to make it look really splendid. It's probably not only where he lives, it's probably also where he makes his business when he has visited, maybe clients coming to see him. And in that last space that we are placing in a 3rd century AD, this room, and this room will be covered with mosaic floors, as their other two rooms in the central area will have more simple mortar floors. And the back corridor get just a gravel floor, probably again functional area in the back of the building, so the servants can go up and down without the need to go into the main rooms. Most of those mosaic floors were completely destroyed. Again, the plow really damaged most of the areas. So we can see what we found in the first room. That will be the first central room. Just a couple of tiny fragments, enough to say there was a mosaic floor here. That's it. Something slightly bigger in the very last room on the top. Again, just a few tesselas in situ, not that much. A bit more in the same room that the first photo. And then in the this room over here is where we have the start of the excavation, which was the main mosaic floor, of which you probably have seen already several photos. It was the last one that we found. We have found at this point the other two small mosaic floors, and we knew there was mosaic floors in those rooms. One of my guys, actually the guy on the top left, started to find some tesselas, and he said, "This is a different room. We're going to have a full mosaic here." They were like, "It's going to be the same. It's going to be three tesselas, and that's it." Well, apparently he was right, and he will remind me that his entire life. That's the recording that we did of the mosaic, where you can see the pattern that it will originally have. So it will be just a big square, an internal square of which is not much more preserved, just a bit here and there, and then the central area with some cells in the four corners, and then a central circular motif with red, white, and potentially red again, white. It's a very simple mosaic. It's just a geometrical shape. Nothing really impressive if we take a look to the amazing mosaics of Pittsburgh Roman Palace, for example. But if we think that we had originally a building that was kind of a residential area for the owner of a house, of the owner of a villa, of a big land area, several fields, who was probably originally living somewhere else and just visited occasionally, and it turned into this, it's actually quite impressive how in the last phase of life of the building, they turn it into something that tried to show the power, the richness, the wealthy status of a family. They try to do it in a way that for us now may look really rudimentary. We see that mosaic and I love it. It's the only one that I found in my career and probably the only one I will find. But looking to some other Roman mosaic, it's not that impressive. We look to the Hipparchos with some stone pillars and structure, and it's not that impressive. But at that point, no one will see that. They will see a mosaic floor in a really impressive room with painted plaster walls. They will see that it's a bathhouse in which they can go and have a bath. They have the sauna. They have all that high status stuff. They don't look behind the walls. If we look behind the walls of some of our buildings now, we will be surprised what is there. But they look amazing. It's the same approach. They try to do spending the less money the better, the building to look really splendid for the owner of the house to move there and have his business and his life. And just to finish, because yeah, I'm about the time, I wanted to show some of the finds that we had. Again, some of them we had them in the open day. These are the photos that we took after some cleaning. One of the most interesting ones is the steel jar scale at the bottom, really degraded, but with some of the lead weights still standing, plus a lead weight that we found in a later pit red deposit, which suggests again some kind of trade activity. We have some copper alloy spoons and a stylus. The copper alloy spoon at the bottom is very well dated in the 3rd century AD. It's quite common to find it in all that area, and it comes from one of the robber trenches. Less impressive, but maybe more interesting, is the small one. That small copper alloy spoon, according to my metalwork specialist, is probably late 1st or early 2nd century AD. And it comes from one of the leveling deposits just below the main building, what is giving us a very good date for the construction of the first phase of building A. The top one is a bit, we have a bit of controversial. We have been talking about that piece of bone as a stylus from the very same day that we found it. We saw it to a professor in the University of Reading, and he told us completely certain, it's a stylus. And then we send it to her again, and she's not that 13 anymore. So it can be a stylus, it still can be a stylus. It fit with the typology of some of the Roman stylus, but it also fit with the typology of some hairpins. We have other fragments of a stylus, much more obvious, and we have other hairpins, so it could be one or another. Honestly, I don't know what I'm gonna put in the report yet. I guess the specialist will decide, and I will follow him. A really nice bracelet, copper alloy bracelet with two rings that we found from one of the pits just outside Building B, one of those later phase buildings. It's dated for some parallels that we have in the same area in the 3rd century AD, maybe early 4th century AD. And I had one of my guys, the one who found it, digging the whole pit trying to find the stone that will go on that ring. We dry sieve the whole field. It wasn't there. And finally, some of the coins we found. If I remember right, just over 60 Roman coins, most of them copper alloy, and most of them 4th century. A lot of Constantinus. Some can be dated in the second half of the 4th century. Most of them come from the robber trenches and the abandonment deposit after the villa get abandoned. They give us a relatively good date of something that we had dated already with the pottery. We knew that the abandonment was around that late 3rd, early 4th century. We know that the building is robbed out and reused in the late 4th century. And that's as far as the coins go. We have also a couple of medieval coins. We have one silver coin that came from Venice. A medieval one. We don't really know how it ended there because we don't have that much medieval finds. There is a couple of shirts and some metalwork that suggests that one of the robber trenches, one of the walls, was robbed out during the medieval period, and is where we found that coin. So maybe the case that's the reason it ended there. But most of the coins are Roman, are 4th century AD. With a couple of them really early, we have a couple of coins that we can date during the time of the Emperor Claudius, and those coins are dating the really early features that we have, the really early ditches that we have, fitting with the same date for the pottery that we have in those ditches. And that's everything. I hope I didn't bore you too much, and you enjoyed. That's one of the final photos of the excavation with just some of the members of my crew. We were only 5 when we took that photo, but for those 9 months, I believe every single digger in my company was at some point digging in this side. And all of them really, really loved them. We don't really have many chances to dig a Roman villa in our profession, or at least not a full building of a Roman villa. So thank you very much for your attention.
What a job you had in trying to interpret a hugely complex site. You're going to take questions, I think.
Yep, of course.
So, anyone got any questions? Michael.
Can you describe what you think the last phase of Building A looked like? Are we talking about stone lower walls with a timber structure and a pitched roof? Roughly, what's it like?
Is problematic again in the sense that with the amount of stone that we have, our first thought is that we will not have full stone walls all the way up to the roof.
Yeah.
That was my thought from the beginning. It's more likely to have small walls with just a wooden structure to continue up to the roof, covered with painted plaster. The main issue we have, the main problem is that with that really shallow stratigraphy, we don't know how much of that we have actually lost. The fact that in the corner where we have the roof collapse, we haven't found that huge amount of stone suggests that if the roof is collapsing, the stones will probably, the walls will probably have followed shortly. The walls were not robbed out in that area. The bit of the wall that we have preserved is quite well preserved. So that suggests that it shouldn't be a huge, a much larger amount of stone. So I will go probably for lower walls, probably not even 1 meter with good continuation, and just again with painted plaster, it will look really great, and you will not know if you have a stone or what you have underneath.
And do we think the stone is local?
The stone, I think, is local. It's mostly limestone, and the geology of the area, according to the search that I've done, should be limestone. Just below the gravel, a few meters below the gravel. So probably there are some points not too far where they will be able to get it.
And the tiles I saw were red, so the clay must have come from quite a way.
Potentially, yes, but we have different kinds of tiles. That's sadly a question that I'm still not completely able to answer, because the tile and brick is one of the specialist reports that I'm still waiting. Again, my intuition will say local, considering the amount of effort and money that they are putting on the building. I don't think they will go really far away for the sources of the tiles, because that will make them much more expensive. Everything seems to be local. Everything seems to be done to look great, but with them spending the less the possible. I will say probably local clay, but I cannot answer it for sure.
Thank you.
I was most intrigued to see you at a so-called prone burial by the northwest corner.
Mm-hmm.
I can echo that in the Coombe East End Roman villa, excavated in 2008, which was a male with a neonate on the back.
Mm-hmm.
So. This is a building 34 metres long, good stone foundations, 9 metres wide, and it echoed, in one sense, the plan very much with a square building to the south of that.
Mm-hmm.
This was a corridor villa too, but it one could say this is an early one, but it grown out of an Iron Age community. So it, you know, it seemed to me that it was, you've got the Roman features coming after the Iron Age. We've got, I think, kind of continuity of Coombe East End, where one has a kind of identified Paul Booth at the pottery, so we have, you know, I take my hat off to him, but we've got Middle Iron Age, Iron Age, then Romano British, which then creates this rectangular building which supplants the circular building, which I think sometimes go on into the second century as well. It'd be wrong to think of them as that, but it's a I was interested that you know that you two had initially that skeleton to the northwest of the corner.
Yes.
This was the area of the building which to me had the kind of rubbish side. The east end was actually well swept, were kind of neonates, children of burial, but they were they were well preserved. They were carefully dug in a ditch at the east end of the building. But on the south side, there was a corridor, it was a veranda probably, not nearly established as yours. We didn't have the subdivisions.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes out really at probably the end of the, probably not much goes beyond the kind of the second century, third century AD. The latter building, the square one to the south, does have painted plaster in it. But that may have come from that building. But there were no more mosaic floors, which is a great relief to me, I must say. not having to excavate one. But anyway, I think it's a fantastic discovery in relationship to the, you know, an ever-growing number of buildings down in either side of Aitkin Street.
Mm-hmm.
This great concentration of Iron Age settlement, you know, in the, you know, the Grimm's Ditch area, you know, of which, you know, it's exactly, I suppose, is the, you know, is east of that, but you know,
mm-hmm.
the relationship between that Roman trading settlement at Sanson's Farm, which is just kind of west of here. So, you know, Aitkin Street is probably linked the two sites, no doubt.
Probably, yeah. And that was one of the things that for the whole excavation I was hoping to find that Iron Age face underneath the building, because, as I say, from the very beginning we were identifying all that Iron Age pottery. Myself, I'm more an Iron Age archaeologist. It has been always my area of expertise, first in Spain, then Portugal. Now here is what always interested me more. I just ended doing an amazing Roman site because my boss considered that I was the best one to do it at that point for whatever reason. But from the beginning, I was looking to the pottery that we had in many of the features.
Did
and it's like
you have any glass?
We have quite a decent amount of glass.
It's the early glass at Coombe, which is the dating of glass at Coombe, which gives it the early date.
Mm-hmm. We have some fragments of glass bottles, small glass bottles, that one of our specialists is still dealing with. They seem to be relatively early, belonging probably to the first phases of the building. And then there's a few fragments that are probably windows glasses as well. But it's, again, one of the few specialist reports that I'm waiting for. But I definitely remember picking on site a few fragments of glass, looking at them, and it's like, this is a windows glass, this is not a vessel, and then others with a really nice rim, small diameter, sadly very fragmented. We don't have something big, but again suggesting that high status that the building had at some point.
Well, in reference to the gentleman's first question about the tile, in fact, the Coombe Villa had, the first building had terracotta tile, the second one had pentagonal stone slates, which are probably stone slates, kind of the point of fate. So it's kind of quite interesting that they were there later.
Yeah, we believe that belonging probably to that latest phase, not the proper villa, not the proper building, but that latest phase, once the building collapsed and it get reused with the corn dryer, those small structures, it's probably some structures with stone roofs. We have quite a decent amount of those stone roofs with the holes, a couple of them with the nails still going through, most of them in the area of Building B, but a couple from Building A as well. But all of them come from the very top collapsed deposits, which suggests that it's most a later phase than the original roof of the buildings.
Did you find a well or any other evidence of water supply to the
No, we didn't find any well. It was one of the things that we were looking for, especially considering that the second building by the corner, we work with the theory that it's probably a bathhouse, a part of the hypocaust that can always be a heating system. The flue pipes that we have, the pumice stone, the toilet instruments, everything seems to point to the idea of a bathhouse, but we don't have the source of water. Again, is the building that we have been able to dig only in a small percentage. And the wettest area of the site seems to be, so looking from here, the school will be over there. All this area of the site was absolutely dry. As we move to this side, all this side was really wet even in summer.
So my guess is that the water source will be in that area where the school or the playing fields just over there are. But during the excavation, we didn't find it.
Jeff Adam, would any of the earlier buildings, you know, the first time they built a building, would any of them be that not been tiled?
Sorry, again, didn't.
Sorry, I'm losing my voice. I think I'm getting off. Yeah, the first building, yeah. The farm or villa, at any stage, would it have been thatched? And would it be only the later ones that would have been tiled roofs?
That was another possibility.
I mean,
that
wouldn't have had any evidence of it, but
yeah, because we found only the roof collapse, the
yes,
tiles
yeah.
in that back corridor.
Yes.
We thought originally that it could be the case that only that back corridor had that kind of roof tiles.
Yeah.
But again, it doesn't look likely considering that the nice appearance, the nice looking view of the building with the red tiles will be the area that any
yes.
visitor will see, and the entrance of the site will be on the opposite
yes.
side.
All the stages of that building would have had tiles.
I think I believe so. Yeah. We have been finding tiles
yeah.
all across the site in all the collapse and all the demolition deposit, just not in such a large amount as we have in the back corridor. One of the theories that we were working with also was the possibility that only that entrance that originally will be flanked by the two rooms and later will go straight into the front corridor, only that front will have tiles roof, because the concentration of tiles in that area is also slightly higher. But it's true also that the central area, the central rooms, is where it's less stratigraphy preserved, which is probably the reason we're finding a lot in the back corridor, more in the front corridor, and less in the center, because probably that original pipe that the collapse will do has been flooded and destroyed more in the center than in the corridors.
Yeah. We did see you in the winter. We felt very sorry for you.
Well,
the rain and the wind.
I have to say that I really suffer in winter sometimes. Most of my crews suffer much more in summer where we had that heat wave.
Yes.
A couple of them actually had to send them home early because they were really struggling.
Yeah.
But it's part of our work.
I'm just going to take one more question, then I think it'll be questions over a glass of wine.
Me?
Jill, yes.
You showed us a picture of a school with some charcoal nails in. And then you went on to say this is, and the numbers may be wrong, but this is a 42-year-old woman with a 28-week fetus? Something like that.
Again?
A young woman with a fetus.
With a fetus, yeah.
Yes. So in that cremation, I'm just interested in the technology that you can take that little cremated piece of material and come up with that information.
Actually, I could say it's not technology at all, it's very rudimentary. When we dig that small pit, what we usually do, we dig it in a speed of 2 centimeters, and we take absolutely all the soil, bag it, and go to our office. We wet seal that soil in a way that all the charcoal and all the really small bones start flooding. We take all that, and then we dry sieve it with 2 millimeters grit. We take again all the bone, all the charcoal that we find, and from the residue, we just spread the residue on a crate in the table. And our people, the raining days when they are not able to dig on site, they just start picking all the small fragments of bone and charcoal. And that goes to the anthropologists. We're really lucky because the anthropologist that work with us in the university is really good, and it always amazed me the way that with such a small fragments of bone, she's able to give us that information. But the fact that we know that it was a female of 20, 25 years old and a 26-week fetus, I remember, is because looking at the bones, she's able to identify and difference the age of the fetus and the young woman with the bones. It's actually one of the new professors of Reading University, teaching anthropology there and working for us. And it's just her experience for years and years looking at tiny pieces of bone and being able to difference what it was. In my case, I can have a whole femur, and I don't know if it's 50 or 25 years old. And then I give it to her, and he tells us a lot of information.
Right, David, thank you again. That was just thanks, a wonderful talk. A really wonderful talk. And there's information about the Mosaic project on the table there, and a form if anyone would like to indicate they would wish to get involved in the project. The more people get involved, the better. So we'd be very interested if people would like to sign up for that. And you may remember, some of you will remember, that about 6 months ago we said that we were going to reproduce an 1844 map of the fields in Tackley and all the names of the fields. We've now done that, and we have copies of those maps on sale, which are in the far table over there if anyone wants to go and have a look at them. And finally, the next talk, a month from now, at the end of October, on October the 21st, is by Keith Westcott, who is a metal detectorist who discovered the enormous Roman villa at Broughton. And he's going to come along and talk about that discovery. So I hope to see you all there. And thank you again, David. And there is wine over in the corner. So compared to what we have.
Yeah, the geology when we have play geology, we are not able to have no. Such a nice one. The only thing that is easier than gravel is chalk or limestone. When we see right here chalk or limestone, the dark fields of pyrometry is
right, because we got to the church.
Yeah. No, you can have your picture of the back. Has its own little thing.
You're not taking a selfie, are you?
No, I'm not. Don't you be rude. No, it's sometimes when I hold it up, it won't.
Once we are able to run three of the sequences, it's like this is so much faster. You can see how everything is changing. In other words, apart from the photo that makes it more interesting, the fact that we see the different faces. As I say, you see the general plan. The